Speaking with Sean Crozer, that Poverty Project guy. How are you doing today?
Very good, Rob. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good. So first of all, for those who aren't familiar, maybe just a real brief rundown of what that Poverty Project is all about.
Sure. It's a year long with me doing three different poverty experiences, each 3 months in duration. The first one focusing on those who are homeless, second one on the struggles of the working poor, and the third one on hunger.
So the first phase wrapped up. You were living in a tent in your backyard for how many months?
Just shy of 3 months. I got really lucky with the weather. Only about a dozen days went below zero at night, and there was more sunny days than rainy days.
And what did you learn from the first phase?
I've learned a number of things. I've learned that I don't need as much. I don't need to watch TV as much. I don't need to shower as much, drive as much, eat as much. And of course, I don't need as much stuff. I've also learned that psychologically, there's a huge difference between camping and living in a tent. The big difference is about choice. When you don't have the choice, it's no longer recreational. It's just your life. I've also learned that, you know, everyone has a unique story. These are real people who are without homes. We can't be looking at them through myths and stereotypes. We have to see the real people because they could be us. And of course, I've learned a lot about gratitude. I'm grateful for a warm bed. I'm grateful for electricity and being able to read at night. I'm grateful for clean clothes, having a nice shower, simply having people around.
You know, I've been following that Poverty Project on Facebook and on Twitter, and I've noticed that the project has inspired a lot of discussion, both encouraging and some critical as well. How have you maybe respond to that a little bit?
Sure. Well, a vast majority has been supportive and encouraging. There have been a few that that think I'm nuts, but you know what? We all have different perspectives in the world. I'm confident that what I'm doing is achieving some very good results. You know, the Poverty Project already made over 100,000 impressions through traditional media. Through the social media, it's accumulated 2,500 followers. There's almost 10,000 reads in my blog. But most importantly are the testimonies I'm getting back. Stories about people whose perceptions about the poor have changed. And from that, their actions have changed. There are people that have actually taken people in from out in the cold because of what they've read on my blogs. And that's just, it's humbling, but it's also very much encouraging knowing that I'm actually achieving more through talking and reflecting on my experiences than I could ever hope to achieve doing things myself.
The indication that I got from your first interview too is that that discussion is something, is one of the main purposes of the project. You just want to encourage that discussion, right?
Absolutely. It's too easy for us to ignore the reality of poverty that exists here in Canada, in our own town of Canmore, lots within Alberta, a very rich province. 10% of the Canadian population is below what one could regard as the poverty line. They're living in extreme conditions. And then, of course, there's billions around the world. This is something that we have to address. If we don't address poverty, it will, in fact, come up and bite us. I don't mean to sound threatening in that, but the reality is that when people's needs aren't met, that it can only go on so long before change has to occur.
For those who want to follow you online, what are some of the online links you have?
Well, all the links can be found at my website, which is www.thatpovertyproject.com. And from there, people connect with Facebook, Twitter, they can connect with my blog and get all my email addresses.
So you've finished phase one. You're on a bit of a break right now before starting phase two. Maybe tell us a little bit about phase two, what you're going to be doing and what you hope to learn from the experience.
Sure. Phase two focuses on the struggles of the working poor and runs from November 1st through to the end of January. Over that 3 months, I'll be living like millions of Canadians and billions of people around the world where they have some means to cover some of their needs, but not all. I'm going to be having a roof over my head. I will have my utilities covered. However, the leftover money to cover things such as food, transportation, clothing, and anything else that I want is going to be very small. I'll be averaging about $7.50 a day to cover all of that. It is going to fluctuate just like one would in the marketplace in the developing world. You might have a good day in the market and earn more than your average, and another day you might have a bad day and earn very little or nothing at all.
And what are you basing that criteria on about how much you can spend in a given day?
You know, it's a little bit arbitrary because there are people that are living in poverty with more than that, and certainly there are those with less than that. I tried to pick a number that was going to be a challenge, one that related somewhat to the experience of those who have to really choose between, do I pay my rent or do I buy groceries? So I went the route that, okay, you pay your rent because then at least you have a roof over your head, and then try to make do as best you can with what's left over.
So what are some of the sacrifices you expect to make during this phase?
Choice will be a huge sacrifice. Obviously, when you have very little money, you don't have a lot of options. I expect that I'll be eating a lot of the same types of food, at least in the beginning, until maybe I can accumulate a little bit of stuff. Oatmeal, potatoes, Kraft dinner, I don't know. I'm going to also not have a lot of option with regards to transportation. Gas is very expensive.
I remember in your first phase, you went out and did some bottle picking to raise some additional funds. Are you going to be doing some unorthodox fundraising that way as well?
No, this one is about somebody that is working, and they're already, you know, working their butt off. Mm. And the fact is that working their butt off still doesn't cover all of their needs. And so there will be no additional funds. There may be hospitality that I receive from time to time, but that's normal if somebody were to, be invited over for dinner or something like that, but nothing that would take away from the integrity of the experience. It's going to be especially challenging on those days when the income may be zero. When somebody starts thinking about, oh, well, he'll just have a little bit less to eat or less options. But if you really start to bore down into that, the things that you're missing are, what about spices? What about butter or milk, something that you would normally add to something? All of these things are expenses and they add up. What about when you have to buy soap or shampoo? That cuts into your food budget. What about when life throws you a curveball and you absolutely have to go spend $10 on something? Well, if that $10 represents your entire food budget for the day or 2 days, that's a lot of grief. And so that's the sort of thing that I expect to experience. I don't know how it will all unfold, but I know that I'll experience those sorts of things.
Throughout the Poverty Project so far, have you talked to people who are in the situation? They're working hard and they're just barely making it?
Absolutely. There's tons of examples around us. I've actually had the opportunity to communicate not only with local people, but through Twitter and Facebook. I've been in communication with people in lots of other places of the world. There's a homeless woman in San Francisco that is a regular tweeter with me. And through the shared experience that one can find online, you really do get a sense of the struggle that's out there. And it gets more and more frustrating that our leaders and those in positions of authority aren't doing more to address this issue.
A lot of this sort of sounds like the spirit of the Occupy movement, in that, you know, people are working their butt off, and just with the cost of living these days, they just don't seem to go anywhere.
Absolutely. The Occupy movement is really capturing the essence of the frustration that is out there. Too many people put it off to them being lazy bums or homeless people and you know, good for nothings. That's just not the case. I mean, there are people on those lines that have lost their homes and they've worked hard all their lives. There are people there that are Pulitzer Prize winners. There are people there who are homeless, but it's not by their choice. Nobody wants to go and live in extreme poverty. When you have 50 million people in the United States without health care coverage, when you have homes being lost due to a financial system that is essentially broken, when you have such a wide gap between rich and poor, you are going to have frustrations. And the Occupy movement is a result of that. And I'm very pleased to see that it, in fact, for the most part, is peaceful, respectful, but persistent.
Sean Krausert, maybe just give that website one more time where people can get your links.
Sure. People can follow That Poverty Project by going to www.thatpovertyproject.com.
Sean, That Poverty Project guy, always great to have you on the show, and best of luck with phase two.
Great. Thanks very much, Rob. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.